Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Coffee Talk at Kevin Marlboro. You're listening live on talkradio.nyc, or you're watching us live right now on facebook.com/talkradio.nyc. You can find the podcast after every episode. You can find it on Google Podcasts, Apple, Spotify, pretty much anywhere that you can get a podcast, you can get it. The show's going great. We're a couple of months into it now. This is the fourth version of my show, starting way back about 13 years ago when I had the original Coffee Talk show when I was a coach at the University of Toledo. And so I got a great episode tonight. I was on vacation last week. Actually, my whole plan was to have the show last week live from Vegas because I was on vacation in Vegas. If you can't tell by how dark I am right now. But the internet was spotty and, you know, just wasn't going to work out. So we ended up just having a rerun last week. But I'm back now. And on tonight's show, the first half of the show, I want to continue the talk that we had before I went on vacation about track and field. We were talking about the Olympic trials and about some of the drama. We're going to revisit some of that because over the last 2 weeks, we've had more happening with Sha'Carri Richardson. And the thing is, if you're not even a track fan, if you just watch the news, then you know about these different types of scandals or whatever you want to call it that are happening right now because they've hit the mainstream media, good and bad. But a lot of attention on track and field right now. We're going to touch on that in a minute. Then we're also going to talk a little bit about this new name, image, and likeness. It's NIL is the acronym for it. But NIL, name, image, and likeness, is now the means by which college athletes can make money off of their own image. And there's a lot of rules behind that, a lot of good. Being a former NCAA Division I head coach for many, many years and having had runners that would have been able to benefit from this at the time. But at the same time, there's a lot that comes with it that are maybe unintended consequences. And we're going to talk about those in a little bit. And then the second half of the show, I have a longtime friend and colleague, Craig Lake. She's going to be on the show to talk about athletics. She was actually the very first woman who was in charge of the men's and women's track and field programs at an Ivy League school. So she was the first Ivy League coach in any sport, actually, to be the head coach, to be a female, to be a head coach of a men's sport in Ivy League history. And so we're going to be talking about that. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, sexism in athletics and in athletic departments. And we're also going to talk about her new career because she's been for the last 10 years. She's one of the top real estate agents in all of Boston. She's been featured in Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and, you know, various other publications, being named as year in and year out as one of the top real estate agents in Boston, only dealing in high-end real estate. So she's going to be my guest on the second half of the show. But getting back to Vegas real quick, just to touch on it. A of all, brutal hot. I'm talking like, I've been to Vegas before in the summertime, but for some reason, it just felt even worse this time. Now, I played two rounds of golf. We were going to play three. There was no way it was going to happen to have three. Matter of fact, the first round of golf that we played, it was about 108. And I don't care what anybody says about dry heat. It was brutal. So I only made it through like 16 holes of the first round before I was literally just about ready to pass out. And then the second day, I actually felt great. And everybody else in my group felt like crap because it was like 109 the second day. But I did a little preemptive strike on the hydration. But real quick about Vegas, man. I love Vegas. I love to gamble. I love the excitement. I love going to shows. I love that the Raiders, who are my favorite team in the NFL, are in Vegas now. Love all of that. I will say this, though. It's almost like coronavirus didn't even exist in Vegas. I mean, when you get to Vegas, not one person wearing a mask anywhere. And people are just everywhere. As a matter of fact, there was one of the CEOs recently of one of the bigger chains, I want to say maybe Caesars, said that for the foreseeable future, all hotel rooms on the weekends are sold out in Vegas. I mean, it everyone's heading to Vegas. They've been bent up for a year and a half. But, man, I'm telling you, with this Delta variant, and you got a whole lot of people, anybody that watched the MMA fight, Conor McGregor the other night, when he broke his leg and saw Donald Trump there, knows that a lot of the people that go to Vegas are in that kind of cross section of the United States that didn't necessarily get the vaccine, you know, kind of anti-vaxxers or something, man. But I'll tell you what I did do. As soon as I got back, I got back on Thursday, literally, as soon as I got back, made an appointment to go and get a COVID test, because I wanted to make sure that whatever I may have gotten in Vegas would actually stay in Vegas. And, you know, tested negative life is good, but it's a crazy place. So anyway, circling back to the world of track and field, as I said, you don't even have to be a track fan. Now, as a matter of fact, kind of like the feeling within the world of track and field right now is that we suddenly have all these people that are now considering themselves to be, I don't know if they consider themselves to be fans of track and field, or if they're just honestly jumping on the bandwagon to talk about track and field because it's in the forefront of various debates. Now, we talked about Sha'Carri Richardson maybe about 3 weeks ago, and how personally I dig her. I mean, I dig her. I love the confidence. I love the hair, the nails. She reminds me of FloJo back in the day. She's her own person. She's tough. She's a competitor. She's all the things that I think make up a great athlete. She got her own brand. Now, the thing about her is, though, that she kind of, she can be arrogant at times, you know, but at the same time, you know, hey, you know, she walks the walk that she talks, you know, so I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. Matter of fact, I don't think anybody should have a problem with her anyway, because it doesn't really affect your life one way or the other. But the point is that she has a certain brand about her, and you either like her or you dislike her. I'm not going to say hate, because that's a ridiculous word. I don't know how anybody could hate somebody because they're confident, you know. So, but what did end up happening, and that you've seen on the news, and you've seen on all the daytime morning television news shows, is that Sha'Carri Richardson did test positive for marijuana, for weed. And here's the thing about track and field. This is what, and the problem is, there are a couple of layers to the problem here. One aspect of the problem with all this is that people who are only casual track and field fans, or just casual sports fans, or you're not a sports fan at all, and all you're doing is reading a headline or looking at a picture or reading a caption, and you immediately, because this is the way society is now, you make a decision. This is how I feel about it. I dig my heels in, and I don't want to hear anything other than what I feel. That's what happens to pretty much everything now. But this is what's happening in regards to this. So my cats, let me tell you something, man. I say this every week. My cats they want nothing to do with me for the most part during the day. Come on now. Until I'm either doing my show or I'm doing an audition. Now I've got Grayson up here trying to stick his head through the light ring. that's life, man. That's life when you got cats. So anyway, getting back, a lot of people, they just see the headline. They just run with it. So she tests positive for marijuana. And at first she's handed down, or she's staring down, a 2-year ban, which would effectively obviously take her out of the Olympics, and potentially even, I don't want to say would end her career because she is quite young, but it would be devastating to her career. Not to mention all the money that she's going to be missing out on. So here's the thing in the sport of track and field. So, and this is what the casual fan doesn't understand or really care to understand. In the sport of track and field, more so than pretty much any other sport, you are subject, when you're an elite track and field athlete and you're a part of USA Track and Field here in the United States or Athletics Canada, and if you're Canadian, et cetera, you are subject to random drug testing at any time. You can be drug tested at any time out of competition. You literally have to give USADA, who is the U.S. Anti-doping agency that handles the drug testing and enforces the drug rules, but it's actually WADA, W-A-D-A, the World Anti-Drug Authority, that is in charge of creating the rules by which all countries have to follow. So these are worldwide rules. These aren't rules that we make up here in the United States and, you know, willy-nilly, and whether we're going to follow them or not. These are worldwide rules. We have to follow them. We have to agree if we're going to allow them, if the world governing body for athletics, World Athletics, is going to allow us as a country to be a part of their world championships and the Olympics and et cetera, we have to be subjected to these drug testing rules. These are, and the rules and the discipline for drug testing violations in track and field are much stiffer than, say, Major League Baseball, which is like barely even existing in terms of the accountability. You can get a 25, 50 game suspension for testing positive for steroids, straight up steroids. 50 games, you're already making. You can take that money. These guys have that money in a mattress. You get caught once in track and field, and it's a 4-year ban. Okay, so you're subject at any time to drug testing. Now, when you go to the national championships, there are certain times when you know you're going to be drug tested. You know, without a shadow of a doubt, you're going to be drug tested. One of those times when you go to the Olympic trials, you either go to the U.S. championships or you go to the Olympic trials, you finish in the top four. As soon as you're done, you're carted off to a private area. You have somebody who escorts you, and that's going to be with you the whole time. It's going to watch you pee in a cup, literally watch you pee in a cup. You don't go anywhere. You have to go from the event. You're shuffled through. You get drug tested immediately if you're in the top four. You know ahead of time that this is going to happen. And I'm going to be back here in just a minute, and I'm going to explain why that is relevant, why that's relevant to what's going on right now with Sha'Carri Richardson. And we're going to talk about a few other things. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc. Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. I'm talking about, continuing my conversation from the first segment, about Sha'Carri Richardson, who's been in the news because of her ban that's going to effectively keep her from competing at the Olympics this year because she tested positive for marijuana at the Olympic trials. So here's what I was getting at. You know that you're going to be tested. Now, the thing about marijuana is that in terms of being a banned substance, it's actually only banned in competition. Out of competition, it's not something that you have to worry about. In competition, it is listed along with all the other, I don't want to just say performance enhancing drugs, because and this is where kind of like the media has kind of spun this, and people that don't understand has kind of spun this. It's not on that list. That list of banned substances is not only for performance enhancing drugs. Crack is on there. Meth is on there. I mean, there's a lot of things that are on there that aren't necessarily performance enhancing. Now, one could argue that marijuana, weed, is a performance. It does enhance your performance, you could argue, because it does relax you. It does have healing qualities and these kinds of things. Now, the problem with what's going on with the media and running with this and turning this at somehow, and Sha'Carri Richardson, to her credit, she's not responsible for this. She owned up to it. Hey, I'm human. She explained the whole situation. I get it. I've screwed up. Everybody, anybody who's been watching this show for the last 12 years knows I screwed up royal. First thing you do when you screw up, you better own it, man. Own it and take responsibility, and you got to push forward. And that's what she's done. She's not turning this into some big political debate or a debate on racism or our drug laws in the United States. This is what's happened. People are just running with this. Oh, well, weed is legal in 19 different states. I don't understand how she could be banned for this. And then you've got AOC, who I love, right? But she's in the wrong pool on this one, right? She's out of her lane completely, sending a letter to USADA, who is the U.S. anti-doping agency. USADA hits her back up and says, hey, we just enforce, we don't make these rules. These are worldwide rules. You know, this isn't this, whether there's a debate of whether or not weed should be legal in the United States, whether or not it's been used for years as a kind of a opening the door for police to harass African Americans and et cetera, all of that. I get all that. All right. I got no problem with weed. I'm 420 friendly, man. But there are rules, and these rules aren't made by the United States. We just have to follow these rules. These rules are handed down because you got to remember, we're only one of over 200 and something countries. We're sitting here, people getting all freaked out, acting like we're the only country that matters. That just because, ask somebody from a small country in the Middle East or in South Africa, about weed and hey, it's legal in Oregon. Who's Oregon? Where's Oregon? I don't really care. You know, you go to some countries, man, dude, you just even have weed and you're going to jail. It's mandatory. So these rules are worldwide. They have nothing to do with whether or not we socially accept marijuana or we socially accept weed, or if it's, first of all, it's still illegal federally. Now, it's legal in certain states, but it's illegal federally. Okay, so it's still illegal in the United States. It's very illegal in a lot of other countries, a lot of countries that are even bigger than us. Okay, so I think that people are a little bit misguided in this whole thing. Look, she owned up to it. She shouldn't. Hey, man, if she'd have just waited a week, then she'd have been all right. But the reality is she tested positive at the event, at where you know you're going to be tested. And now they did shorten the ban down to 30 days. And there was potentially an opportunity for her to go to the Olympics still and run on the 4x1. There's some speculation as to why that didn't happen, because A of all, I mean, I've talked about this before on the show, and I'll mention it again. She's coached by Dennis Mitchell. Okay, Dennis Mitchell, I'm stunned that the guy is coaching. All right, he's already been banned himself personally more than once. Okay. He coaches Justin Gatlin, who's, I don't know, been banned more than once. He coaches and part of the coaching team for Christian Coleman, who's banned right now. Dennis Mitchell, the worst relay coach that we've ever had in U.S. history. How many times we dropped the baton in the Olympics, World Championships, when he was a coach? I'll give him the one gold medal, you know, but other than that. So the perception following her in that wasn't so great. And then he's trying to bark for her to be on the anchor leg and whatever. I really couldn't care less whether she runs or not. All I care about is that people need to be educated as to exactly how things work, but people don't take the time to do so. Another thing I was going to talk about this week is the new name, image, and likeness that is going on in the NCAA now. This is also in mainstream media, whether you're a sports fan or not. So what basically has happened, and I don't have a ton of time to go through the entire thing, but I'm going to Reader's Digest version of this. So for years, college athletics at the Division I, II, and III level, the NCAA, well, NAIA as well, has always maintained an amateurism aspect to it. So you're not allowed to go out and make money based off of your athletic performance and maintain your eligibility within the NCAA. Part of the reason for that is because there is a wide open door for this to be abused and for schools or donors, more particularly donors, to be paying athletes under the table in cash and giving them additional benefits that are illegal. Okay. This is what happened to SMU back in the day when they got the death penalty. If you're even a casual sports fan, you know what I'm talking about. It's because all those football players were getting just envelopes full of cash after every game. So now what the NCAA, well, they're being forced to at this point, is that if you have an NIL, so the NIL, the name, image, likeness, you can go out and you can negotiate your own endorsements or sponsorships based on your name, image, and likeness. Now, you can't use the school to piggyback on this. So, like, if you were to sign a contract with, I mean, there's a lot to it. So to say you sign a modeling contract that you're going to endorse some law firm in town. It's only you as a person, as an athlete. You can't show up in the school's gear because the school itself is not endorsing that law firm. You as an individual are endorsing that law firm. So I do think that it's good. That, you know, hey, listen, if you can go out and make a dollar, and listen, there's some people who are going to make tons of money. You know, you got this girl at LSU, Olivia Dunn. She's only 18, 19 years old. She's got like 4 million followers on TikTok, TikTok. You know, hey, who's 50 in this room? She's got 4 million followers on TikTok. She's got 1.3 million followers on Instagram. She would be considered a social media influencer. They're saying she's going to be able to line up some modeling contracts and whatnot based on this new NIL, where she'll be a millionaire by the time school starts in the fall. Whereas in the past, you would have to wait on all that money until after college. Now, here's part of the problem here that I have. I was a college coach for 20-something years in Division I level, right? So what a lot of people don't get, if you weren't an athlete, particularly at the Division I level, particularly at the higher end of the Division I level, if you weren't an athlete, you really don't know how much money is actually being invested in these student athletes by the school. So you've got people who are politicians, and you've got people that never did a day of college in their life, like LeBron James, never went to college a day in his life, where they're saying, you know, it's about time that the athletes get paid. Well, back up a second, man. Hang on a second. You know, if you are an NCAA Division I football player, so different sports have, so you can either be a counter sport or you can be an equivalency sport. So an equivalency sport basically meant that you can get any scholarship, any amount from basically books all the way up to a full scholarship. If you're a college football player, you're in a counter sport, which means that everybody gets a full. So not only are these kids getting full scholarships, which are worth $50,000 to $60,000, that's tuition. First of all, it's all of their tuition. Then they're getting a rent and meals check. So they don't live in the dorms after like their freshman year. They live in an apartment. Your rent and meals check is based on the most expensive dorm, and it's divided into 10 equal payments. So they're getting like $2,500 to $3,000 a month for rent. And oh, you got a cat too, Craig. Nice. And so they're getting all of that money to live on. And what the average taxpayer doesn't know, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a full scholarship person and you were eligible for the Pell Grant, now the Pell Grant was designed to be given to people who don't have money so that they can help pay for their schooling. And if you're an NCAA Division I football player, not only did you get all your tuition paid for, all your books, all of your health care, all of everything that associated with a rent and meals check, $2,500 to $3,000 a month. But because you have no bill and that Pell comes in, if you're Pell eligible, they give it to you. They just hand it to you. It's a refund. You get a check for the Pell Grant. That's not what the Pell was made for. The Pell was made to help people that can't pay for college pay for college. And so these kids are walking away with their Pell Grant. And they had a cost of living grant that they were able to get. So all said and done, you figure everything in that a college athlete in a counter sport at a big-time Division I school gets, and it was upwards of $70,000, $80,000 a year. And then you got people that never are associated with athletics for a day in their life saying, oh, you know, it's like slave labor. You go and you practice for 20 hours a week. $80,000 a year job. You know, now, like I said, I'm all for them going out and making money. Get what you can get, because at the end of the day, I'm not a coach anymore and I really couldn't care less. So, listen, I'm going to be back here in a couple of minutes. I got my buddy Craig Lake. She's going to be here as my guest for the second half of the show. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening on talkradio.nyc, or you're watching us live on facebook.com/talkradionyc. Make sure after the show that you go and download the podcast. It's available on Google, Apple, Spotify, yada, yada. So second half of the show here, longtime friend, former coaching buddy, coach in the same place. Actually, you're muted, so you got to unmute yourself. Craig Lake. Now, Craig was... I think you got, there you go. Craig and I, we coached together back in the late 1990s. We were at Columbia University together coaching cross country and track and field. Now Craig ended up going on. She became an associate head coach there at Columbia, and then went on to be the first female director of cross country and track and field in the Ivy League, in Ivy League history, when she went on to Brown. Now she's like big time, you know, high end real estate agent in Boston, you know, getting featured in Wall Street Journal and everything else. But Craig, how you doing, man? Great to see you. I haven't seen you in forever.
No. Good shape, though.
What's that?
Stayed in good shape.
Well, you know, when you're an actor, you got to keep the curb appeal. You're in real estate. You understand what I'm saying. This is all staging. You know, There's a lot that goes into it, you know, just got to keep that curb appeal up, but I appreciate it. You know, it's a lot. As of you, I read in your bio that you're still out running along the river there in Boston, still making it happen. Got to fight off Father Time.
I can definitely run more.
Yeah, that's great. Listen, I was just talking earlier in the show. I don't know. Do you follow track and field much anymore still, or?
I don't as much. I obviously, through some friends who are still in the coaching world, my friend from high school, Pascal Dobert, who helps train and coach Shelby Houlihan.
Right.
Which you know, I believe she's innocent. I felt that, you know, it's really unfortunate situation when you still have somebody who has been proven to lie on the WADA, you know, committee and drug committee.
Yeah.
And the trace amounts that were found. And then, of course, you and I both know how it can be plastered and spun in a way that's very biased. So all over the normal news, it's pork burrito. She blames pork burrito. And so, of course, normal people are like, oh, what a lie, which gives her a bad name, gives the sport a bad name, unfortunately, and the truth doesn't come out. And kind of like you were saying, with a four-year ban, I mean, you hit your peak, you hit your peak.
Yeah, because I want to say she's 28 now, right in that range. Yeah, I actually talked about this a few weeks back on my show. Here's what I said about it is that, you know, obviously, I don't know if she's innocent or not. Nobody knows except for her deep down, you know, whether she is. But here's my feeling is it's entirely plausible that she's telling the truth. And I think that the whole thing with the pork burrito and the media just taking off about that, the reality is, which people don't want to hear this, but in order for you to file an appeal with CAD, with CAD in Switzerland, You have to give them an excuse. You can't just go in and say, hey, I want to peel this. I don't know where it came from. And so if you really aren't taking it, and I laid out like a few weeks ago how difficult it is to be on steroids, these kinds of steroids, and to hide it from everybody, hide it from roommates and everything else. Anyway, you have to give an excuse. Well, of course, if you don't know where it came from, you have no idea where it came from. You're going to go back. Obviously, it was ingested somehow. Right. And when you go back and look at all the things that you eat, well, it sure as hell didn't come from a bunch of green beans and a Brussels sprouts. You know, you have to go back and look for logical places it would come from, which would be meat. And, you know, she doesn't eat that much meat. You can narrow it down pretty quick. I don't eat that much meat. You know, I can narrow it down. I can narrow down how many meals of meat that I've had in the last 3 weeks. I can tell you where I ate it, you know? So, yeah, I think it's totally plausible. I don't even know. I mean, I feel horrible for her if it really is, if she's really telling the truth. And I'm not saying she's not telling the truth. You know what I mean? I was talking earlier in the show about Shikari Richardson and with her and the weed ban. But I wanted to talk with you about, because you and I had this discussion, you know, leading up to the show about sexism in athletics and in athletic departments. And these are things that you've lived through yourself. And the thing about Shikari, I got no problem with Shikari Richardson. I think it's awesome. I think she's tough. You know, she's flamboyant and she's outspoken. All of these things. I feel horrible for her, but at the same time, rules are rules. I get that. But what I want to get at is that some people, you know, people either like her or they don't like her. And a lot of the things that the people don't like about her, quite honestly, if she was a guy, they're not having the same conversation about that. And I know that when you became the first female director in the Ivy League for track and field, you had to deal with a lot of that pushback about your success. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that.
Even at Columbia, nobody cared about me until we became successful. And even, I mean, ripped to shreds. The very few women coaches that are out there are under such scrutiny and a spotlight. And these anonymous message boards, it's actually funny. One of my assistants at Columbia said she was at a meet when people were talking about what a jerk Craig Lake was and, you know, just how abusive he was and how terrible he was. These people had no idea that I was a woman. They were going on and on. She was literally sitting behind them, just like,
yeah,
they kept talking about you as if you were a man. And obviously they had never met you. They didn't know who you were, but they had read these anonymous message boards and just hated your guts. And it's just so hilarious to me that, you know, and I was an insecure 20-something year old that kind of just hung my head down low, and people were probably like, oh, she's so standoffish or whatever. But I just, you know, didn't know how to handle all that. And it's tough. Women in athletics and just even women athletes in general, it's sad. It's, we haven't come that far. Since Title IX came into existence, there's less women coaches in the NCAA than ever. Women seem to get fired a lot more often. I think, unfortunately, women are often a token female hire. And if you don't make waves, that's fine. But if you really want to win and you're competitive, and I can be intense, I'm not saying I hadn't made mistakes. Or there aren't things that
we all do.
There's a few very concrete moments that I can think of. But it's just sad to me. At least women's tennis, they're paid equally, but a lot of the men's tennis players stepped up and supported that for women's tennis. Track and field, unfortunately, until they put bars in the middle of the the field, I'm not sure how to get more popularity with track and field. But I just found there's definitely a male coach can get away with more, I think, than a woman coach can. And part of it is women are their own worst enemy as well. There's so few at the top that you feel competitive with one another. And then girl athletes, sadly, I feel can take more or handle more when it's coming from a male coach. And I've seen men coaches do far worse than anything I had ever done. I've seen someone throw something at his athletes. I've seen, you know, a bunch of stuff that would never even cross my mind to do. Or even a football coach in comparison, telling an athlete, you know, like, you're fat, lose weight. Like, those words never came out of my mouth. To say, you know, eat to be lean and athletic, you're causing eating disorders.
Like, right.
Drink 8 glasses of water a day, you're causing eating disorders.
Yeah. I think, you know, the problem is that, well, it just keeps perpetuating. There's like this never ending cycle to it, but it started once Title IX hit, and which one thing that's really amazing to me is that Title IX was in our lifetime. You know, it's stunning to think about when we were in high school, there was no NCAA women's championship. It was the AIAW, you know, and
I am.
Oh, well, when I was in high school, you know, but it, within our lifetime. So what they did was they had to add all of these women's sports. Well, they just gave the job to like the lowest ranking male coach on the men's staff. And he would take over the women. And a lot of these guys now, a lot of them are out now because, you know, obviously it's been 40 years now. But when we were coaching, it was obvious who some of these guys are. They only got the job in 86. Or 87 when they added the women's team, because like he was the only person there to do it, you know? And so then you have a situation where the women athletes who would maybe even potentially go into the world of coaching have a negative experience as athletes. And then, well, why would I go into coaching? You know, my coach was an ass or whatever, you know? And, but the problem is that, like on these message boards, a female gets hired. Like even look at it right now. I mean, I go to it every once in a while just because I'm still kind of, you know, in that world a little bit. And every female hire is just ripped to shreds. Oh, I can't believe they hired her, you know? And it's just, but you don't, I mean, you see a little bit to the men, but it's not the same. It's definitely not the same. And
when I was at Columbia, that other people did the work. Other people were coaching. I just recruited.
Yeah, you're accused of just being a clipboard holder.
Yeah. Which I was the only coach going to those practices. I was the only coach, you know, overseeing.
And you're writing them, the workouts, you know. It's not, this isn't by accident. Well, listen, Craig, I got to take a commercial break here for a second. We'll come back. I want to talk real estate with you because I'm totally intrigued by all these millions of dollars that we're talking. But I'll be back in a minute. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening on talkradio.nyc. I'm here with my good friend Craig Lake and a former college coach for many, many years. Very successful, incredibly successful. And got out of coaching. Decide, how did you land on real estate? You're muted again. People always ask me, how did you end up becoming an actor, which is just a crazy story in itself. But how'd you land on real estate? And then segue that into, how did you land on high-end real estate, not just selling, some two-bedroom apartment down the road? So how did that happen?
Interestingly enough, 2 years before I got out of coaching, I had contacted a company that I had actually met somebody on, that I had met somebody who owned this real estate company. And growing up, my best friend's mom and my best friend ended up teaming up with her later in real estate where I grew up in the Maryland area. So I had always kind of looked up to her, but I just found it fascinating looking at properties. I was kind of looking to move to the Boston area anyway, because coming from New York City to Providence, Rhode Island is quite the adjustment. So I was kind of looking through and kind of like obsessed with looking at apartments and stuff like that. Obviously, I didn't start just by selling. I started only doing rentals my first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time I was dating someone. He's like, kind of, who was there throughout kind of the transition. He's like, well, you'll make like $30,000 to $60,000 your first year. I didn't mute that.
That's your phone.
I'm here.
That's
text.
All right.
I'm texting. Basically, I remember him being like, yes, you'll make like 30 to 60 your first year, and thinking like, challenge accepted. And we're breaking up. Like,
yeah.
So,
hey, thanks for setting that ceiling so high for me.
I'm like, so you're saying that's what the average real estate agent makes? I'm like, I remember, I mean, obviously money was never a huge driving force in my life. I coached for 15 years, squandering away my $20 per diem every day and packing my own lunches, bringing my own oatmeal to like squirrel away my $20. Anything that was comparable to what I was making in the living standard that I had in Rhode Island, I would have been happy with. But there's nothing harder, I feel like, than really coaching full time, especially at Columbia University, recruiting kids in New York City. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worked so many hours in a day, recruiting West Coast up till 1 a.m., 1:30 in the morning. So I felt like it was actually a really easy transition, oddly enough, from coaching into real estate. Mm-hmm. Similarly, being the coach that calls the most and who remembers conversations. And, at first I really enjoyed all of that stuff. It is tough not to burn out when you do it for so long. But real estate, it's a people person you know, and I think it helps that I'm pretty dead honest upfront about my opinions of places. And I've yet to have a client lose money, you know, partially also because we've had a really good ride with real estate, but I take that very seriously in picking the right places. I'm not there just to make a sale. I'm there to really help people and guide them to making a good decision.
Right. Well, you know, it's karma too, because, you know, if you're, you know, if the goal ultimately is to help somebody, not to make the money, but to genuinely help somebody, then you're always going to be, you know, good things are going to kind of come back to you. You know, I one of my companies that I own is a concert production company. Well, similarly, when I go to rent a venue, you know, my spiel is, hey man, let's all make money. I ain't greedy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, let's all be in this together. Let's work together and find the best way to make this happen. And I know that for me, and I'm assuming that the same is for you, I'm a competitive guy. I mean, I wouldn't have been a college coach for all those years. You wouldn't have been a college coach all those years. You're not a competitive person. And just like when this idiot tells you, oh yeah, maybe you'll make $30,000, you know, it's like, you know what? I just want to be the best, whatever that means. You know, I don't even know what that means, you know? And I think that that's a really good transfer of being a coach. You know, we have a lot of friends that are still coaching that they hate it. I mean, I'm not even kidding. They hate it because, and they got no exit plan.
Right.
You know, and, you know, did you have an exit plan this real estate, or was that going to be the exit plan, or did it just happen to be the exit plan?
I was kind of, I was burnt out. Brown was definitely a challenge for me. Also, I felt athletes kind of changed a little bit from generation to generation. I mean, I grew up with Bobby Knight style coaches, for better or for worse. I can remember at a swim camp, them yelling at us. We were walking across this parking lot barefoot with like glass, pebbles, rocks, and they're screaming at us like, hurry up, pissy ants. And the only thing that crossed my mind is, well, I hope I don't step on glass, but what is a piss ant? My mind wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm going to tell my parents. Or, and I was like, I did. I felt accomplished after, and I was tougher after, and it was just a different time back then. Whereas all of a sudden I'm coaching college and 20-year-old moms are calling me, but she tries really hard. I don't understand why she doesn't travel. I'm like, well, she might be in physics. I'm sure she tried really hard in there, but doesn't mean she's going to get an A, you know? So I think for me, it was just time to get out as well. I was no longer happy doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, 12-hour Saturdays, 12-hour Sundays, 100 feet of the 4x4. What sport has that many heats? It's like you watch the first basketball game. Now you're going to watch the second string play the basketball game. Now you're going to watch the fifth string. And I honestly feel that track and field does itself a disservice by having so many heats of stuff. I mean, who has the attention span?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's a big problem. I've talked about it on this show and other, I've been guests on, of course, other podcasts, track and field podcast. You know, big track is its own enemy, you know, and the world of track and field, you know, people ask me all the time, hey, would you, you know, if you had an opportunity, would you go back to coaching? There's no way. Why would I ever do that? First of all, I enjoy my lifestyle, you know, and I'm not going to just cut that into a third again, you know, and try and live like that.
Sure. To be successful, it has to be your entire life.
It is. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't, you know, as well as I do, look at how many college coaches are either unmarried or divorced in track and field. You know, football coaches, they got trophy wives, you know, and, but basketball coaches, same thing. Cause these guys are rich, you know, they, you know, they just, that's their life. But in the world of track and field, I mean, because it's not a real life, you know, and there's no change in it.
it's a, such a microcosm when you're in it too, that you forget that there's this outside world. But for me, like in real estate, people are like, oh, that sucks. You have to work weekends. I'm like, no, no, no. You have no idea what weekends used to be like.
Yeah.
Weekends over, you're on a freaking bus with 60 sweaty kids that haven't showered and you're covered in mud probably because you've run all over the place. You know, at a certain point, I was just so done. And it showed. I mean, I was done.
Yeah, you don't want to be like the Chief. Remember for the Celtics? You know, you stayed a little bit too long, couldn't walk. You know, it's like, you know what? You got to be like Jordan, man. Well, Jordan the first time and get out when the getting's good. I got one last minute. Tell us, what is the most expensive crib that you've sold? I got it. It's got to be a ridiculous number. What's the most expensive sale that you've made?
It was $20 million, but I negotiated at the end $300,000 off after the inspection. With that said, this was a home, single family home that needed an entire gut renovation.
So somebody bought this thing for $19.7 million only to gut it.
Oh yeah.
And to redo it.
Because it was a like multi-family that needed to be made into a single family.
Is this a famous person that bought this, or is this just somebody that just has monopoly money? You don't have to say who it is if it's famous, but is it somebody that's famous?
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be almost that kind of money.
I know.
You know, that's like, that's monopoly money.
Yeah. Money becomes very, very relative in real estate.
Man, I'm telling you. Yeah, your whole frame of reference just.
But I still do rentals, Kevin. I still do rentals. I take nothing for granted.
Listen, man, never forget your roots, right?
Never.
Yeah. Listen, Craig, thanks for being on the show. Best of luck. I hope that our paths cross next time I'm up in Boston. And we'll go out and we'll do one of these, right?
That's so good.
And I'll meet the husband, Paul.
He's the best.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So I'll find out in person. Listen, I'll be back next week on Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 o'clock here on talkradio.nyc or on Facebook.com/talkradioNYC. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and I'll see everybody next week.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism?
Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.